I have a confession to make. I quite like country music. I quite like the singer-songwriter Chris Rea as well. And my favourite Christmas pop song is Driving Home for Christmas, but hey, this is Easter, so I'll have to tell you about that another day. I heard another one of Chris Rea's songs this week. It's called Tell Me There's a Heaven. And here are some of the words. Every night a baby dies, and every night a mama cries. What makes these men do what they do to make that person black and blue? Tell me there's a heaven where all those people go. Tell me that they're happy now. Tell me that it's so. Well, it is country music. I didn't say it was cheerful. Chris Rea is not alone in writing songs which respond to the pain and the hurt of life. I guess we all relate to those kind of songs, don't we? We look around and we see a world that's filled full of pain and sorrow and trouble and hardship, and we want something to be done about it. We find ourselves longing, don't we, for a better place. Of course, there is lots of good in the world, isn't there? It is a wonderful world that God has made. Aren't you enjoying the simple joys of lighter evenings and spring-like days at the moment? At least some days at the moment. There are times when it's just good to be alive, aren't there? This is a good world that God's made. But there are also times of great sadness. Maybe a friend or a family member is drawing close to death, and loved ones look on with hearts breaking. Or maybe it's the sadness we hear about every time we turn on the TV, the real pain of real lives wrecked in the war-torn areas of the world. And then there's injustice. There is so much unfairness in the world, and corruption and hurt and pain. And yet, don't we long for a world that is not like that? A world of justice and fairness and honesty. We long for an end to the terrible destruction of war and the sadness of death. We long, frankly, for a better world. And so maybe we find ourselves, whether or not we like country music, crying out with Chris Rea, tell me there's a heaven. There are so many sadnesses in the world. Tell me there's a heaven. There are so many wrongs, and it seems they'll never be put right. So maybe you find yourself longing for somewhere better and different. And that is why Easter Sunday, Resurrection Morning, the rising of Jesus from the dead is such important and such brilliant news. I'm talking about the real, actual, bodily resurrection of Jesus, which is the most momentous moment in the history of the world, or so the Bible will claim. And that's why the first Christians spoke about it all the time, again and again. And that's what the Apostle Paul was doing, what we heard about in the reading from Acts 17 just now. He was in Athens, not on a weekend break, but on a missionary journey. And he was debating and conversing and discussing with various people, religious Jews in the synagogue, normal people on the street as well, trying to persuade people that Jesus did rise from the dead. Some of the people, at least, he spoke to didn't have a clue what Paul was going on about. Have a look at verse 18. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to debate with him. Some of them asked, what is this babbler trying to say? Others remarked, he seems to be advocating foreign gods. They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. And Paul spoke about the resurrection, but some of them got the wrong end of the stick. They didn't understand. It all seemed a bit strange to them. And maybe you're visiting us today and frankly you feel in the same boat. But these people in Acts were very, very, very confused. Paul spoke, did you see that at the end of verse 18, about Jesus and the resurrection. And now the Greek word for resurrection here is anastasin. And if you're interested, that's where we get the name Anastasia from. And in a kind of comedy of errors, what probably happened is that these people got the wrong end of Paul's stick. They thought he was talking about two gods, Jesus and Anastasia. And hopefully you won't leave this morning with the same kind of confusion. Paul, of course, is not speaking about two gods. He's speaking about one, Jesus, the true and living God, the one who came and lived among us, the one who died on the cross, the one who rose again, Jesus and his resurrection. See, if you're going to understand Christianity, if you're going to grasp what makes Jesus unique, and if you're going to see why Jesus is so relevant for you, whoever you are, then you've got to understand that Jesus rose from the dead. See, everywhere they went, the first Christians preached Jesus and the resurrection. And here's the thing for us this morning. When our hearts cry out with Chris Rea, tell me there's a heaven. Well, Jesus and the resurrection, that's the way you can be sure. And so that's the first point today. The resurrection tells me there's a God. Because if there's going to be a heaven, there has to be a God. And the resurrection tells me that there is. These people in first century Athens certainly hoped there was a God, but they weren't sure about him. And maybe you feel the same. Have a look what Paul says, verse 22. Paul then stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, people of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious, for as I walked and looked carefully around your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, to an unknown God. And people in first century Athens worshipped many different things, but they weren't confident about what they worshipped. And so they hedged their bets, if you like, with another altar, one to an unknown God, just in case they'd missed one out along the way. Now, looking 21st century Scotland, we're not exactly putting up altars everywhere, much less to an unknown God. But most people that I meet do have a hunch, at least, that God is up there somewhere. They certainly hope he is, but for many he's unknown. How can I know him? I'm not sure. Maybe God isn't someone that you talk about very much, but as a church leader, I suppose I'm in the privileged position of having those conversations with more people. And I'm in the privileged position to know that many people, and probably more than you realize, do ask the big questions of life about the existence of God and whether or not there's a heaven. I really don't meet many people who are flat-out atheists. I meet far more people who would describe themselves as agnostics. They just don't know. They'd like to think there is a God, but they can't be sure. Well, that's exactly verse 23, isn't it? Those in Athens erected an altar to an unknown God. But look what Paul says to them at the end of verse 23 there. He says, you are ignorant of the very thing you worship. That's this unknown God. And this is what I am going to proclaim to you. We've enjoyed running a Christianity Explored course these last couple of months here. Folks getting together, folks who are interested but as yet not convinced about the Christian faith, coming to talk together and read the Bible and bring their questions and discuss the issues. And one of the questions we found ourselves discussing was this: how can I know what God is like? Now, we all agree it would be good to know what God is like, but how can we know? Maybe in some ways that information just seems a bit beyond us. How could we ever be sure? And look, isn't it a bit arrogant of Paul here to say what he does? So he's wandered into Athens, and he's standing there before some of the most learned men in a great city, and he says, to paraphrase, the God you don't know, I know all about him, and I'm going to tell you about him. Just imagine for a moment that I walked into the philosophy department at Aberdeen University. I've made this up. I trust there is one there. I don't know. Anyway, if there isn't, imagine there is. Imagine I walked in there after the Easter break and stood before people who've got more PhDs than I have GCSEs, and I'm from England, so you have to translate my qualifications. Imagine for a moment I stood before them and said, look, I know you're all eminent professors of philosophy, and this God thing you've been wrestling with your entire careers, well, I've worked it out because I am cleverer than you. Well, yes, that would be very arrogant, and it would show you I had a hugely overinflated view of my own importance. But be sure that's not what Paul is doing, and that's not what Christians are about. Yes, we are certain of the existence of God and the character of God, but it isn't because we've worked it out. It's not because we're cleverer than anyone else. Now, we can know what God is like only because God himself has chosen to show himself to us in a real person, in Jesus, in history. And he walked this planet teaching things in a way that had never been taught before and acting in ways that had never been done before and doing things which were so out of this world so as to show that he himself was quite out of this world. And then the thing that clinched it all is that when this man, Jesus, was killed on a Roman cross, a very efficient method of execution, certified dead, put in a tomb, 3 days later, he rose from the dead. You see, it's all about Jesus and the resurrection. Because if that is really true, the real, actual bodily resurrection of Jesus from the dead, well, then you can say, and I can say with confidence, that God does exist. And because, you see, of Jesus and the resurrection, if it's true, we can know not only that God exists, but we can know what he's like as we look at Jesus. And so if you're new today to our church, to the Christian faith, let me say, the God that you don't know about, I can tell you about. But it's not because I'm clever. It's most certainly not because I'm cleverer than you. It's because together we can look at Jesus. And maybe you're in that boat. You're not sure about the existence of God. You've come to church because it's Easter Sunday and it seems the right place to be. Welcome. Thank you for coming. And if that's you, can I suggest that looking into the person and the life of Jesus, and especially his resurrection and the evidence for that, that is the best thing that you can do to get to grips with your questions about whether there is a God and what he's like. First, and the resurrection tells me there's a God. Secondly, the resurrection tells me there's a heaven. Chris Rea sang it. Don't we all feel it? Tell me there's a heaven. And whether or not you think of yourself as a Christian or religious, I think the time we all have that longing, most acutely, that longing for a heaven, is when we are at a funeral, when we stand at the graveside of someone we love. So the tearful widower says of his dear wife, she wasn't a religious woman, minister, but she's in a better place now, isn't she? Those are not the confident words of someone who's convinced that there's life beyond the grave. Often they're the words of us clutching at straws because we need to believe that death is not the end. Tell me there's a heaven. Well, look, the resurrection of Jesus tells you that there is a heaven and that there can be life beyond the grave and that there is a way of experiencing that life beyond death for yourself. Let me say how I wish that everyone would engage with this issue during their lifetime. I consider it a great responsibility and a huge privilege to be entrusted with conducting someone's funeral and to sit with grieving relatives and hear the story of the deceased's life and all they did and all they achieved, all they were busy with. And look, for all of us, life is busy, isn't it? It's hectic. The demands of modern life are extraordinary. And yet so many people are engaged in so much busyness and they devote themselves to work and to pleasure and to achieving this or that or the other that again and again, many give no thought to this question, the greatest of all questions. Where's my life heading? What will happen when I die? And if it's really true that eternity hangs on those sorts of questions, are there really more important issues to get to grips with? So look, on this Easter Sunday morning, if you're unsure about God or heaven or hell or life after death, would you resolve, can I challenge you to resolve to say, yes, I will get to grips with my questions? Will you do that? And can you see that a really good place to start would be to understand something of Jesus and the resurrection? Because if Jesus is who he said he is, if he really did rise from the dead, then you need look no further than him in your search for God. So can I invite you, in fact, can I encourage you to join us at those season of invitation services? We'll be looking at exactly those sorts of questions. Who is Jesus? Why did he come? And what does he want from me? Jesus and the resurrection. Will you get to grips with it? So the resurrection tells me there's a God. The resurrection tells me there's a heaven. Thirdly, the resurrection tells me there is justice. Look again at Acts chapter 17 and verse 31, little number 31. For he has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man he has appointed. He has given proof of this to everyone by raising him from the dead. Now, look, for many teenagers, the Easter holidays are spoiled by revising for exams. And so this time of year, I'm sometimes reminded of the story of the boy who had a biology exam. He worked really hard, he prepared really well, and on the morning of the exam, he came into the room, sat down at his desk, lined up his pencils neatly on the side. And then the teacher came in and stood at the front and said, "Boys and girls, this exam is very simple. You have half an hour, but you'll need to get up from your desks. Because all around the room are 25 different birds. But each bird has been covered by a sack so that all you can see of it is its legs. This is a biology exam, so all you need to do is to identify the type of bird, but only by looking at its legs." The boy's heart sank. He revised hard, but he hadn't revised birds, and certainly not birds' legs. Frogs' legs, yes, but not birds' legs. So he took a few deep breaths and he stood up and he began going around the room, but he became more and more frustrated. It wasn't fair. He'd revised so hard. This was the one thing he hadn't looked at. And he became more and more frustrated and angry. "It wasn't fair," he said. And after a few minutes, his paper was just a mess of crossings out and blank spaces. And when he couldn't stand it anymore, he marched up to the teacher at the front and he said to her, "It's not fair." And then he scrumpled up his piece of paper and threw it at the teacher. And he was marching out of the room. At which point the teacher said, "Wait, boy, what's your name again?" And so the boy turned around and he pulled up his trouser legs. And he said, "Well, you tell me." It's not fair. How many times in life do we say that? And when bad things happen, when you look at the injustices of the world, including ordinary lives wrecked in the war zones of this planet. But here's the great news of Jesus and the resurrection. God has set a day when he will judge the world with justice. The resurrection, you see, it shows you that there's going to be a day of reckoning and of judgment when all of the wrongs will be put right. Isn't that a wonderful thought? The risen Jesus knows and sees everything, and so one day he will act like a judge in a courtroom does. He'll bring justice. He'll get rid of evil and suffering and wrongdoing. He'll put the world right again. There will be a day when justice is done. The BBC have recently put out a new docudrama about the trial of American actor and American football player O.J. Simpson, who was accused, as you know, of murdering his ex-wife, Nicole Brown. Simpson was acquitted of her death in a criminal court. He was later found guilty in a civil court. Was Simpson guilty? Who knows? And will justice ever be done? Well, the answer is yes. Who knows if Simpson is guilty? Well, he does. And Jesus does. And he will bring justice. Or what about the suicide bombings in Brussels this week? The pain of the families of the victims is only increased by the fact that the perpetrators are now dead themselves and so can never be brought to account. But the message of Jesus and the resurrection says, yes, they can, because God has set a day he will judge the world. And isn't that good news? And it means that all the injustices that you and I have suffered will be put right as well. That is very, very good news. But it's also sobering news. Because it means that all the wrongs will be addressed. And my life is far from perfect. And all the wrongs will be addressed. And that means that my wrongs will be addressed. All of our wrongs will be addressed, especially when it comes to the way that we have treated God, which is the big issue here. Now look, I don't know all the details of your life, but I know that I haven't lived up to my own standards, let alone the standards of a holy God. And far too often God has just been a footnote on the page of my life. And the Bible says that at heart, that's how we are. We push God away. We want life to be lived our way, not his. And so the thought of justice being done, well, that's a sobering thought, isn't it? Because what about the things that I have done? What about my sin? What about our sin? Which is why, fourthly and finally, the resurrection of Jesus points me back to the cross, to Jesus' crucifixion. See, when you know that Jesus is coming as judge, well, look, you and I will then know that we need to have our sin dealt with. Somehow we need to find forgiveness so that we can come back to God. Look, maybe it strikes you as a bit odd on Resurrection Sunday, me talking about Jesus' death. And frankly, maybe it strikes you a bit odd that we call it Good Friday when we remember Jesus' death. Good Friday? Jesus dying? What's good about that? What's good is that Jesus' death is the way that God, who is both loving and just, deals with our sin. And as Jesus dies voluntarily, he takes upon himself the justice, the judgment of God that ought to have fallen on me and on you. Well, instead it falls on Jesus. You and I deserve to be punished, but Jesus is punished instead. You and I deserve separation from God, but it's Jesus who experiences that on our behalf. And you and I deserve, in the end, death, not life from God. And yet death comes on Jesus. And so life is offered to us. And all of that demands from me and you a response. The death and resurrection of Jesus is offered out to us like a gift. It's a gift from God which offers us forgiveness and eternal life with Jesus. But like with any gift, there's a decision that each one of us needs to make. That is to accept it or to decline it. The message of Jesus and the resurrection demands a response. Did you see in the passage that there were a number of responses to Paul when he spoke this message in Athens? Some people just didn't want to know. That's verse 32. When they heard about the resurrection of the dead, some of them sneered. They didn't want to know. But here's your second response. Others said, we want to hear you again on this subject. And look, maybe that's you today. Maybe this is new to you, or you're kind of intrigued or interested. You'd like to hear some more. Well, look, can I again say to you, would you come back? Come back to those season of invitation services. Come to the first one. See how you like it. You might like to come back to all three. And get to grips with the message of Jesus and the resurrection. It will cost you nothing. It could change your life forever. And let me say, that's not a bad deal. Now, would you join us? And friends here, would you take those cards and use them to invite? Very lastly, though, there was a third response. Do you see it there in verse 34? Some of the people became followers of Paul and believed. And look, for many of us here today, that is how we have already responded to this message, perhaps many years ago. And for us, isn't this message of Jesus and the resurrection, isn't it precious? Isn't this a day to be thankful and to praise him for that? But look, maybe for someone today, you're at that stage for the first time. You've heard enough to see that the message of Jesus, his death on the cross for the forgiveness of sins, this amazing resurrection, that you see, you know enough to see that these really are life-changing things. And you're at that stage where you want to accept the gift that God offers, the gift of life. Well, if that's you, I'd love to talk to you more about how you can respond in faith to Jesus.